Thank you all for coming here. If we could do a brief introduction round, if you could introduce yourself, where are you from, and what have you been up to? What do you do, or what have you been doing? That would be great. And started the recording, so yeah. Maybe we start with you, Leo.
Should I say my name?
Yeah.
My name is Leo Kornick. I was born and raised in King Island. King Island is about 90 miles west of Nome, and from mainland it's about 35 to 40 miles out. And we do a lot of subsistence hunting. Mm-hmm. And in the winter time we'd go out on ice, hunt seals or ugrooks or whatever. Every once in a while, a man kills a polar bear, you know. Mm-hmm. And we do a lot of ice fishing, but then when it comes to spring around May, that's when we hunt wildwoods. Were subsistence. And we have a cold storage about a quarter mile from a village where we kick our meat. Mm-hmm. And the cold storage is cold year round. Our meat always frozen. Mm-hmm. So whenever families are Hello? Hi. Okay. Yeah, might be for a while before I go shopping, Junior. Okay?
I like that written down.
Okay, go ahead, you go shopping. All right. Well, anyway, where was I? Oh, yeah.
You have the cold storage?
The only entertainment we have at the island is Eskimo dancing. Mm-hmm. Of course, us kids, we play all the time, and we play games, all kind of games, Eskimo basketball. Mm-hmm. And whenever there's a fresh ice comes in, nice and smooth, you know, go ice skating. Mm-hmm. Of course, we have sleds too, you know. Yeah. And men and women kept themselves busy all the time. Women do their own housekeeping and all that stuff, and the men like car driving. We had three clubhouses at the island. And we're men that car every or whatever they want to do, you know. And it's a very isolated island, you know.
Yeah.
And everybody, you know, happy. And of course, they watch each other pretty well too, you know, what's going on. And at a very young age, I started to go out hunting with my dad. I was about 14, 15 years old when I started to go out hunting with my dad. Mm-hmm. And very first seal I killed, I had to kill anyway. That's tradition of King Island people. It doesn't matter what kind of mammal it is, first kill, they give it to elders or relatives. But the second good you keep, or rather, anything you kill, good you keep after that. And once in a while I think about King Island, you know, what I miss, what I used to do, and come to late part of May or June, most of our King Island people go to Nome, work in summer, and at a very young age I started to go to work myself, because there was 12 of us in the family as kids. So mom and dad had a hard time taking care of, well, I was the oldest in the family. So very amazed I started to go to work. Yeah. Of course, I had to lie about my age too. I was 15 when I started to go to work. A man asked me, "You want a lobster?" And I said, "Yeah." "How old are you?" "17. Yeah, I was 15 years old. 16, something like that.
When did you start fishing?
Fine.
When did you start fishing commercially?
Oh, I never did commercial fish up until I came to Seward.
Okay.
Back in 60, 61, something like that. First year, I commercial fish in Bristol Bay, Gilman. Mm-hmm. Then I came back and a couple of brothers, Alec Mashannon and Rick Mashannon, two brothers from Sandpoint. I was greenhorn, didn't know anything about that. Purchasing, you know.
Yeah.
They taught me everything.
Yeah.
I'll never forget one thing, you know. First day, we made a set, and Fred was the skip man. I was deckhand. Well, anyway, we made a set, and Fred started coming with his skip towards the boat. And here I had a purse line in my hand, and Alex said, "Put that damn rope around the nigger head." "What the hell is a nigger head?" I look around, like, "What the hell is a nigger head?" And here that thing goes running around, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was. Nigger head. I'll never forget that.
They still call it that sometimes today?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Man, talk about commercial fishing person. They holler at you all the time, especially the skippers, you know. Not only us, but the other boats around us too. We can hear them probably 3/4 mile from us too. Holler at one of the crewmen. I said that was bad, but I always think to myself, well, I'm not the only one who got to holler at. But good experience, you know, along with that, you know.
Yeah.
Commercial fishing. I commercial fish about for, I'd say about 15, 20 years, something like that. Mm-hmm. Mostly purchasing. Mm-hmm. In the first year, man, we would get our saying to the deck, you know, that damn jellyfish, get in your face. No matter what you do, if you want salt water, still itching. Go inside, wash your face with the fresh water, Still is. That's terrible. You probably know all
it's the same that. Today.
Man, that maybe hurts. You know.
Yeah. They sting real bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I guess that's all.
Mm-hmm. Oh, what about you, Warren?
I'm born and raised here in Seward. And I guess probably subsistence background here was mostly fish and moose meat, pretty well, what we were raised on.
Yeah.
You know, groceries are pretty expensive, so alternative was to go hunting. And have a garden.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the garden we ate from was right where this building's built.
Oh, really?
Recently, yeah. Back when I was growing up.
I remember that house.
Yeah. House was in the parking lot, the garden was right here. Anyway, other than that, not a lot of, I mean, you know, the normal berries.
Mm-hmm.
Berries, meat, and fish. That was probably the basic subsistence stuff that I recall growing up.
Yeah.
And, of course, we're much less dependent on it now just because there's so many other alternatives. But who knows, depending on how the economy goes, maybe going back. The Dow was down 500 points when I came today this morning.
How long have you been fishing?
I started commercial fishing with my dad right out of high school.
Okay.
He had actually gotten out of, he had commercial fished when he was young and actually had gotten out of it in about the 50s, I guess,
mm-hmm.
and got a real job and did that until the earthquake, and then that kind of encouraged him to go back to fishing again. And plus he had a ready-made crew at home, so anyway, so been pretty much since high school for a long time, both in Cook Inlet area, Prince William Sound, right? I fished about 10 years out in Chignik, and then into a couple years in Bristol Bay, like Leo was talking, although a lot later than he did, but gillnetting up there a couple summers.
And what kind of fishing do you do now?
I did salmon and herring seining, and then that little bit of gillnetting in the bay. And haven't seined herring for about 5 years now, just because the season's not open where I normally fish.
Mm-hmm.
But I still continue to salmon seine every summer. And the last 5 years I've been back in Prince William Sound, so it's been in the local area here.
Well, let's do the introductions.
Oh, I'm Carl, born in King Cove on the Aleutians, raised up here in the Seward. And done a lot of things over the years, learned to fish, construction, work at the high school. And, you know, we used to, not Aleutians, used to fish the beach thing,
mm-hmm.
everything hauled in by hand.
Yeah.
Didn't have no hydraulic. And processed a lot of herring too. The roe, squeeze them, package them,
mm-hmm.
ship them out. Canneries. They were the salmon roe too.
Yeah.
You know, pretty much, that's about it.
Yeah. And I'm
Marjorie Christensen from Old Harbor. And I worked in a cannery in that herring roe.
Mm-hmm.
They preserved the eggs in that brine of salt or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It was, first when you walk in there, the stench was so strong, but you got used to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Japanese was buying them,
mm-hmm.
and they had those little boxes, and we lined all the good parts, and then the broken pieces into a different there. They didn't waste.
They graded the roe. Number one, number two,
mm-hmm.
you know, the full intact roes, number one, and two, the broken bits.
Then I tasted a herring egg fried. This woman invited me to eat fried herring eggs,
mm-hmm.
delicious. She mixed cornmeal and flour.
Oh.
Delicious. That's it.
Melanie, if you could introduce yourself also.
I'm Melanie Stevens, and I'm the program manager for the youth here at Katuchek Native Tribe. Work with the drum and dance group and the elders and NYO and everything.
All right. Thank you for the introduction.
Oh, I work for Jugat's Mute.
Okay. Yeah.
As a native language teacher.
Yeah. Excellent.
Okay.
Well, I have a couple of questions for all of you about fishing and changes in the fishing, whether it's commercial or subsistence, if everyone, whoever comes up with the first idea or thought, go ahead. Do you think that the fishing has changed during your lifetimes, or if the fish have changed?
Fishing isn't that like it used to be anymore, you know. My first year, I went commercial fishing in Crystal Bay, me and Seward. We made all kind of money if you were lucky enough. The last time I had commercial fish, after I paid all my expenses, and take home pay was only $800. So I told my skipper, that's it, I quit. That was Alex and Rick Michan. And here's something I talk about, I think about going back to commercial fishing again, but never did. I'm always tired.
Now you only eat fish.
Pardon?
Now you just eat the fish. Do you still do subsistence fishing?
Pardon?
Do you do subsistence fishing?
Oh yeah, I fish down the beach, you know. Mm-hmm. Sport fishing.
Yep. Salmon or other?
Mostly silvers.
Yep.
This year, no fish at all.
What?
No fish, no silvers.
It's been an off year, at least for along the whole point.
Yeah.
All the people that go fishing, it's not the same as it has been. A lot of pinks, but very few silvers for the people that I know that have been out fishing off of there.
Is it just Lowell Point or the whole bay, do you know?
We've been out for a couple of weeks, June or
July?
July. July, yeah. This is my oldest daughter, and keep thinking about silvers. Mm-hmm. You know, the salmon bird. When I came back to shore, they told me no silvers. They're okay.
Yeah. I know
that
fish, when I was growing up, the beaches were full of where they dry fish all along the beach, it's not happening anymore.
Mm-hmm.
The fish is just, it was scarce this year too.
Mm-hmm. Even up north, like around Teller, all along the coast, and there are no fish at all this year, they say. But I was looking to buy one bundle of dry fish from one old man. Everybody had a hard time up there too, catching fish up there.
We did have a good red run. Reds were good this year. They lasted the whole month of May, and people were able to limit out when they went out across the bay fishing. And it seemed like that was a good year for the reds, but silvers didn't seem to come in.
Silvers haven't come in for 3 or 4 years now. They used to come in real strong, but not anymore. You have to go way out there to get them now.
Okay. Most of them up north, you know, anywhere you go, if you ask somebody if they have dry fish for sale, they sell it. But this mm-hmm. year it's all together different.
Mm-hmm.
No fish. So the commercial, the fishermen, such as the fishermen up there, they just kept their own with their catch for winter.
Yeah.
But that was, like I said, I was looking to buy one bundle of dry fish from this old man.
What do you think that there's, has commercial fishing here in the region, has that changed in your opinion?
Yeah, locally here it's changed. Way back in the 60s, it was more of a red run up in Bear Lake that because of, I think they changed it to, because of the demand for sports fishing for mm-hmm. silvers, they changed it to coho. And that hasn't, I mean, it's reproduced on a small scale naturally after they introduced the silvers. But they also enhance it with smolt that they've raised and mm-hmm. attach it so that they release silvers here and they go out. Mm-hmm. And that's to enhance the sport fishing tourist business, basically. Yeah. And I guess they were right. I wasn't here most of the summer being gone fishing, but it sounded like there haven't been very good returns locally of silvers lately, mm-hmm. but the fishing has been pretty good outside or out to the outer reaches of the bay, but usually you have to have a boat or take a charter. So silver fishing was pretty good, I believe, in July and even into August
mm-hmm.
if you went out an hour or two.
Yeah.
Lots of charter boats had no problem getting their clients' mm-hmm. Limits, but that's pretty spendy to take a charter boat out there on a daily rate and try to fill your freezer. I mean, you can do it and still probably come out ahead because fish is expensive in the store, but it's not like it used to be where you could get almost for free. The exception would be what Melanie was talking about, that red run across the bay. And again, that's another enhanced run,
mm-hmm.
but they do allow some sport, I guess they call it sport snag harvest of it mm-hmm. in saltwater. Although the majority of it ends up being caught either by the commercial fishermen in a common property fishery, or they've also, the previous 2 years to that, I think they allowed the Aquaculture Association that raised the fish to have them caught and sold for them
recovery.
For their, what they call cost recovery, to allow them to derive some income to raise more fish.
Mm-hmm. What about herring?
The herring, boy, if you go back far enough, there was, you know, various herring reduction plants around the state from mm-hmm. Kachemak Bay to Prince William Sound. I'm not sure so much about it here,
mm-hmm.
where they would reduce it for the oil and meal, I guess it was. And, of course, that wasn't a very good managed resource. We're talking back in the teens and 20s and 30s and 40s, I suppose, prior to statehood.
Mm-hmm.
Since statehood, they had a commercial fishery that started around the late 60s here mm-hmm. for seine. And prior to that, from what little I've done and from talking to my father, there has been a herring here, and you could go jig them, you know, personally, not commercially. I think mostly in the wintertime, tending towards springtime maybe. But I don't know how much of that harvest went on, and from my memory, we would try to jig them, and we would end up just not so much for food fish, but try to keep them for bait, sport fishing. And that's what a lot of sport fishing of salmon was here anyway. It was basically subsistence fishing, but to obey the regulations, you had to do it under a sport license. So that's kind of colors the record keeping of subsistence fishing here. Anyway, back to the herring. I think it got fished out in probably the 70s. You will still see herring come in here usually in the wintertime,
mm-hmm.
but it seems like they're smaller.
Mm-hmm.
They're the most, they talk like this is maybe almost a rearing area for juvenile herring to grow. I think oftentimes they grow 3, 4, 5 years before they're mature enough to start spawning themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So it tends to be smaller stuff, and usually we see them in the boat harbor because it acts like a fish trap in the wintertime, and they actually build up in there sometimes. I don't so much know about how much herrings spawn on some kind of substrate. I'm sure there has been some here, and I don't know how widespread it is in terms of putting in either spruce boughs, branches, or just collecting the kelp that has the spawn on it off the beaches of the water, that kind of stuff.
I have noticed a reduction in that because I would go down and get the kelp for the elders. And just in the 9 years that I've been here, the amount that's come in, and I don't know so much of it. We had an issue with over-harvest of the kelp. We had the Korean people would come in with their big 39-gallon trash cans at low tide and take the kelp, and I think that the kelp hasn't come back enough because I've seen a reduction in the amount. And I know that different within the Prince William Sound, when we go to the different villages, they collect it on the branches and things. Mm-hmm. And last couple of years, it hasn't been that good. This year was actually a good year for out towards Tutilik Way, where they were able to get a little bit more that they were willing to share when we went out to the gathering that they had out there and things. So.
Yeah, that's a separate biomass over there that's managed in Prince William Sound, separate from this area, which is considered in the boundaries of Cook Inlet. It's a different management area. And they have not commercially fished, I believe, herring in the Sound since probably the early 90s, 93, 94, 95, somewhere around there, where there had been several fishers. There was a purseine. Herring fishery, there was a spawn on kelp fishery, then they had something called a pounding herring fishery where they allowed people to build these little raft structures and suspend their own kelp in it, and then have a boat catch a certain tonnage of herring and then transfer them into that captive pound where they were stuck until they spawned and then released. And so there's that fishery. There was also, I think, there was actually a winter bait herring fishery also over there in the fall. But all those fisheries have pretty much been cut back, I'd say, for over 15 years. And there's some debate whether how directly it was tied to the 1989 Valdez Exxon Oil spill. But the biomass now, they try to, I think they will not let a commercial fishery happen over there until the biomass exceeds about 20,000 tons. But even that's a tough handle for the Department of Fish and Game to get, because they just estimate it.
Yeah.
And of course, whatever they say the estimate is, it officially is, so it hasn't been a fishery for a long time.
Interesting. I've never heard of that. What did you call it?
Pounding?
Pounding.
Yeah, they just still do that in Southeast Alaska. I'm not sure if they do it anywhere else or not. They do that in British Columbia and Canada. There's actually open pounds where they leave them open. The fairing have to voluntarily swim in because they like the kind of kelp you put in.
Yeah.
Or the closed pound, which you capture some fish and dump them in there, and they're pretty much forced to spawn if they want to spawn. And they would actually import the kelp, a certain type of kelp from Southeast, which is real desirable for the herring to spawn on, apparently. And, that was part of the cost of doing business, was to buy and import that stuff and then suspend it in your pound. And
my oldest son, Herb, lives in Wasilla. He's following my footsteps. Before he started going commercial fishing, he asked me all kind of questions about commercial fishing, And he got hired from Dutch Harbor to fish between St. Paul and Dutch Harbor. But they drag on the bottom, And he's doing pretty well now, I guess. But 2-3 months ago, he got hurt on a job down in the boat, so... he's home right now. They fish 3 months on and 3 months off. commercial fishery between St. Paul and Tishomingo. Mm-hmm.
Is it called drag netting or what?
Trawling.
Bottom trawling, I'm sorry, dragging on the bottom.
What do you think about that?
It's not a very discriminating way to fish. It's indiscriminate, I guess.
Yeah. Do you think it causes any damage to the sea bottom?
I'm sure, yeah.
Yeah.
And it also catches other species. That's part of Western Alaska's issue with dragging. They actually have serious problem with Chinook salmon interception, and I think some chum salmon also problems up there.
I think I read a news article about it happening like on the coast of California or Oregon or somewhere. There's a lot of opposing of that because of the fact that it'll take everything.
Arnie, did your dad see a difference in the fishing from before the earthquake and then when you guys started going back out again?
Like for
did it have an effect on any of the fish or?
I guess it'd have to be more specific of salmon fishing locally or.
Locally, and I mean, if it made a big change to the fish and.
I think probably. A big difference was statehood in 64 or 59. Mm-hmm. And then when he got back into it, it was right around limited entry. And of course, that was another big change that started limiting the amount of gear or boats you could have per area, per fishery. And it was a management tool to try to allow the fish and game to have a better handle on controlling the take and escapement in all the streams and protect, because that was their first mandate, was to protect the survival of each run, each species.
I don't know, but I was wondering too if it might have affected like maybe the herring population compared to what may used to have come in.
I don't know. Herring seemed to me, and I think they kind of tend to move around, whereas salmon, they don't stray that much. They come back to they home back to their original stream. So you'll have a particular run from a stream, and then you can compare that over time.
Right.
Whereas herring, I don't know, is various generations of herring must, they can have a real, all it takes is one or two good years of survival of a, cohort-wise of herring, and the population can kind of explode.
Oh, okay.
And so maybe there's these small amounts of herring that spawn in a lot of different areas, but a population may take off and all of a sudden look like it's a huge contributor to the biomass, but that may only be carried through the population for that number of years of those year classes, and then if they get cropped off by fishing or predation or whatever, or just maybe poor egg survival of the spawn.
Right.
So it's hard to know. And that's part of the problem with trying to blame the Exxon Valdez for problems with herring. I mean, you look at it and haven't had hardly any of a herring fishery within a few years after the spill. They've been never able to really pin it directly on them. Yeah. There's a bunch of disease issues, too. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They still dig oil from the bottom of our country and sound, even today.
Like tar balls or whatever.
Yeah. Still there.
Yeah, I've heard about that.
And with herring, it's more of a, it's much lower on the food chain than the salmon and some of the higher species, so it definitely can have cascading effects on some of the rest of the ecosystem.
Yeah, the lesson plan that this is going to be used is in the Gulf of Alaska and populations, and how we want the kids to understand how a little species like a little fish like herring can have what are the impacts of if herring is missing, how it. What causes it and what will it cause in the future or can cause. Do you think that there's been changes in the sea waters? Like, have you noticed that the sea waters are warmer or winters are warmer? Is there any ice here in the winter? I actually never have been here in the winter.
No, you get a little ice in the boat harbor just because it's protected and still, but it's pretty much ice free.
Yeah,
that's a good question about temperature. That they've got actually pretty good data on, so you could go back and look at that.
Yeah.
You know, they have what they call the El Nino and El Nina effects.
Yeah.
So there's these varying year-to-year type things.
Yeah.
And then they've also identified something else that's on a much longer term called the Pacific Decadal Oscillation, which is, I think, more on, I don't know if that's the 20-year cycle or something.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's all these varying things they're starting to try to measure now.
Yeah.
You know, but as far as to say, talk about global warming, it's hard to...
Exactly.
And be very definitive there.
Yeah.
I would say another man-made effect would be management of other species, specifically marine mammals.
Yeah.
Be it sea otters, sea lions, whales.
Have you noticed any changes in the sea mammals?
I don't know so much about here. How's the seal population's been around here? Harbor seal.
Well. After oil spill, I think they move around quite a bit.
Yeah.
From one place to another. I think, but now I guess they're coming back.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Fishing down toward Lower Point, you know, I see more and more seals coming back since after the oil spill.
Mm-hmm.
But now after the oil spill, they hardly ever see any seals around the bay. No. Sport fishing down the Lower Point, done a lot.
What about sea otters?
Believe me, I watched that pretty close after oil spill. Matter of fact, after oil spill, it took me about over a year before I have a seal meet from here. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Well, once in a while, junior friend, you know, would kill a good seal, and then he always bring me a piece of seal meat. But after oil spill, I wouldn't eat for about a year again.
I know there's not a lot in the bay itself, or we don't see as many, but I do know a couple people that hunt, and they go outside, and they've always been able to get them when they've gone out.
Seal.
So there's, the seal. And sea otter. I know a few people that have harvested those also. Starting to see it. They go in phases, the otters.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like on how many. We definitely don't have like they do out at EAC, where you can count 50 of them standing there on the beach, you know? Or you come around and they're in the harbor and it's like a whole sea of sea otters just hanging out there and stuff. But,
here we have, I see three all the time.
So, I mean, we have, I think there's a good population of them. And sea lions, just watching them on the channel for the Sea Life Center, you can see a good bunch of them out there.
Yeah, on the Chidwell.
Yeah. And if you go out on the tours and stuff, you'll see the seals and the sea lions out there when you go out to their little rookeries and things, so.
Have you seen any new species in fish or insects or birds during your stay here? Or while commercially fishing, has there been any weird catches, like some more exotic fishes or...
Occasionally, and I haven't seen it, but occasionally in Alaska they'll catch Atlantic salmon that have escaped from some Canadian, British Columbian farms below southeast, so you know they stray a little bit.
I've been following the discussion with the salmon farming in British Columbia. I used to work there in Ollard Bay and interviewed same fishermen there, and it's quite a hot topic there at the moment. I'm very happy to that I'm very happy that Alaska doesn't have that kind of salmon, Atlantic salmon farming. Have you seen any sea lice in the salmon here?
Yeah, but they've been present a lot.
Yeah.
I think all along.
Yeah.
I would say one thing I've noticed that I don't know what it is for sure, and I thought maybe it was from sea lice, is the red salmon in the sound. Quite often you'll see some with these little just tinges of brownish spots all over the side, whereas oftentimes the sea lice, normally you'll see way back towards the anterior fin, by the anal fin. And so I don't know what it is that causes those little, they're like a little blemish, a little small, about the size of a sea lice. Maybe a little bigger sometimes. So don't know what that is. I haven't heard anybody address that. And I guess I haven't really asked biologists about it. But that's been going on. Well, I came back to the sound 5 years ago, so I've been there the last 5 years, and I don't remember seeing that when I left in 90. My last year was 95.
Okay.
Now, prior to this last 5 years, I don't recall seeing that situation. But it's hard to say what that might be.
Yeah.
As far as other species, I don't think new species, although I will mention that it sounds like, from what I've heard from residents of Chinita and in the sound there, that there is a much bigger population of humpback whales that are now seem to be resident there year-round versus what used to be there. And I don't know when that started or if it's if it has anything to do with herring population or release of smoke from salmon hatcheries or what, I don't know. But specifically around Chinita, where there is a major hatchery, and I see them there all summer long too, but they tell me that they're there in the winter.
I have people tell me that that's the best time. They like it when the tourist season is over because there's a pod that hangs out and stays right there. And they even go over, if you've ever been to Jumping Salmon Lodge, which is just across from Chinita, right by the hatchery, there's a group that hangs there, and they stay year-round. And I was like, wow, I thought it was really weird, because I thought they migrated.
A huge majority does, and head south. And that hatchery started putting out fry or smolt in, I would say, 79, 80 or so long there, so I don't recall the effect not occurring until this time period more recently when I was gone and have come back. So I would think it's in the last 10 years, maybe.
I think so, because that's about the time that I started going out there.
Yeah.
And they were talking about it.
And then the other thing is that those hatcheries don't really release any fish in the wintertime, which you would think might be what would be keeping them there. So it's a spring out migration thing.
There's got to be something they eat there. Mm-hmm.
And I suspect it's some herring. And so there's people have speculated that maybe the herring are cropped off in the sound there because of a much higher population of whales, maybe not just year-round, but even in the summer, such that that may be a factor of keeping that biomass threshold below 20,000 tons.
Is there any lichen?
Yes.
I'm not familiar with ilegan. Is it? I know what it looks like and tastes like, but how does it like live? Or is it like very similar to herring? Or
I don't know how. I don't think they live as long, but I don't know. But that they run up rivers, I believe, to spawn, and I don't know if they run back down.
In Alert Bay, they made this ilegan oil.
Very oily.
Oh my goodness, it was the most stinkiest stuff I have ever had to try. They dip salmon and potatoes in it, and the way they do it is they catch beach net all the ilegan while they're running upstream, and then they collect the fish on the beach and let it sit there for a couple of days, basically just start rotting.
Decompose a little?
Yeah, and then they put them in big bath kind of tubs where they boil water, and they start scraping the foam that starts to and filter that foam, and it becomes this pretty clear oil. I had one drop of it on my skirt, and flies would follow me for a couple of days, and it was just very, very strong. But it heals everything, they say there, the Cargill. Is there a ligand in Prince William Sound?
I assume there are. I know there's runs that come into some of the streams here.
Mm-hmm.
And usually there's several runs a year, so it's not just
one
time. I think that sometimes there'd be one in February, and then usually in May, June.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure what else. But
right.
Do you eat it?
Yeah.
Do you
mm-hmm.
eat
it?
There's a lot of the elders
that wasn't very strong
this year. No.
Yeah. Scoop them.
Very little here.
Net them to
a couple
trees and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was talking to my brother in the summer of King Island people who won the walrus and that. They say it's not like it used to be anymore, you know. This year, my brother on the walrus, they got 10 walrus, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, they were gone. And then they go out, 15, 20 miles out,
mm-hmm.
go to ice, you know,
mm-hmm.
no walrus. But people from Little Dainese, that they're luckier, you know, and no more walrus hunters. I think hunting walrus is a change quite a bit too. Where I know how many years now. I remember where. When I used to go out with my dad and my grandfather, we used to get just as many we could get the walrus meat and the walrus tusk, you know.
Yeah.
And, but then the people around there, they're behind me, you know. They say it's not like it used to be anymore.
There's some walrus here.
We had one rogue one, well, it was 4 or 5 years ago that kind of showed up out on the bay, and they ended up, the Sea Life Center got him and sent him down to a aquarium down in the lower 48.
Hmm.
And there's another thing too, in Crystal Bay there's a walrus island, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe over that way, they're not allowed to hunt walrus there, I guess. When I think about it, it makes me mad.
Mm-hmm.
Think about the elder people, you know, mm-hmm. who have eaten walrus meat mm-hmm. before, you know.
Oh.
Yeah, that population. I used to go herring fishing up there, and they were very tightly controlled. You weren't allowed within a couple miles of there. Of those islands, and you had to get a special permit, which we did one time to go mm-hmm. look on where they escort you on the beach and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But I, from their description of it, they were so protected there, and the population was growing that they were eating themselves out of their forage, their food area, such that instead of taking a couple of day feeding trips
mm-hmm.
and coming back,
mm-hmm.
they were having to go, I believe it was over a week away to get to their food, and then a week back. And that was in the 80s, so I don't know what's happened since then. I know they're still protected. I think I've heard they've allowed a small harvest from some of the villages nearby there, but I think it's pretty limited.
Hmm.
For subsistence. So.
Have you noticed any changes in the weathers around here? Are the winters colder or warmer, in your opinion, or summers warmer, colder, more rain, less rain, more winds, less winds? Have you noticed anything like that?
Well, when I first came to shore, you know, back in the 50s, it used to be real cold. On the highway, when they plow the highway, they experienced these 8-10 feet up. Remember that?
Yeah, that picture.
Mm-hmm.
part of that is they is the way they plow the road. They throw it to get it back because it used to be just like a tunnel. And that picture is of 12 foot high upside the car here, and you're going down a canyon, you know.
Yeah.
But I don't know.
Especially got that mile 8 on the corner there.
Yeah, it seems like there's milder winters, but you know, that's just kind of anecdotal. I don't really know.
Yeah. Difficult to say. What about seaweeds or other sea plants? Like algae? Has there been algal blooms? Or is there explosions of like more seaweeds? Kelps.
I don't think so.
It's difficult to see, but just wondering if anyone's noticed, like while boating or beachcombing, if there's like.
I just noticed the decrease.
Well, no, I used to pick up in my language, we call them greens, but that hard before they go too long.
Mm-hmm.
We call them tuayos. They're kind of red-like. You probably know what I'm talking about. And put them in seal oil.
Hmm.
Now around my place, I was just hesitating this week to pick at least one jar and put this one seal oil before I did. Road people just put chemical on a road or grass removal. So that was that.
Yeah.
Your mention of plants reminded me that there used to be a little neck clam and butter clam harvests here back. This was again would have been prior to the earthquake, so I suppose you could blame it on the earthquake. But it used to be. You actually could harvest, there was enough to harvest some even commercially, you know. I had an uncle that used to dig them down off of their glacier down past Tanzania.
We used to go over to by the airport and dig butter clams.
Yeah.
That was before earthquake.
Yeah. Yeah, there were little necks there too.
Yeah.
But I think that you know, whether you blame it on the subsiding of the clam beaches or the other thing was protection of the sea otter, I think it was also made it much tougher for them to have any kind of a population that you could actually go dig a meal's worth without digging all day.
Yeah, yeah.
I think that those clams over there, I think they're coming back.
Oh, good.
Because one of my students went to cockle clams.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
They're coming back.
And I know over at 4th of July Beach out past there, that people will go over there and dig.
Sure enough.
But you have to have a boat, they said a skiff to go across in case the tide comes back in too quick.
Well, do you have anything in mind that you'd like to add or tell about any other observations or thoughts that you want to share with the students about?
Well, I would say there's a couple of things we used to eat as kids.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, I wasn't any kind of a staple, mm-hmm. but it was more a novelty. Was poochki, you know, we used
What's
to.
That? Oh, yeah.
Some people call it Indian celery, or I don't know if that's the same thing.
Yeah.
Wild celery.
Mm-hmm. That's just, I don't know if you can see me out the window there. it's kind of like a weed. Mm-hmm. It grows. And you usually want to get a young plant or a young portion of the plant because it's less strong and more tender.
Yeah.
And actually, it tastes better.
Delicious.
Yeah. Is it like celery then?
Kinda.
Better than celery. You know what I used to do? Mix it with my regular salad.
Salad, yeah.
Poochkis, you chop them up. And
kind of has its own flavor. Would add a bunch of flavor to a salad. Yeah. Yeah. Wow. You cut it and you peel the outside kind of off of it, and then the inside is nice, moist, and tender. And that was pretty good. Wow. And the other thing, it was a novelty because a lot of it seemed like if you're native you could eat it, and if you're white you get a rash.
There's
so you could show off, you know. Yeah, I'm tough. I can eat this.
You know, yarrow too. Yarrow.
Once in a while.
Petruscus.
You know,
I
those leaves.
At home.
You find them by the strings. You put that weird in your boiled fish.
Oh.
Yeah.
Is it almost like a parsley or something for flavor?
It's something like parsley.
Okay.
Like.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, the flavor.
Wild parsley.
Yeah. Super to your dish.
Yeah. And wild onion. No, what's the, not onion. What's that? Chives.
We have chives
too.
Yeah. And the watermelon berries. That's something that the kids love to pick and eat. They'll pick the berries and then peel off the stems and eat it. Tastes just like watermelon.
Yeah.
The kids were pulling my legs the first time. They're like, oh, here, try this. And I'm like, you do it first.
Did any of you guys as kids chew spruce gum?
What's that?
Spruce gum?
Yep.
Aguda? Is that what you're... Aguda?
No, spruce gum. You know, you take the sap... Keep it in your mouth and let it get warm so it gets soft and you chew it like gum.
Just like that? Nothing added to it?
Nope, just like that. No.
Yeah, this has got its own flavor, I guess.
But yeah.
Like chewing spruce needles. No, it is a novelty. Mm-hmm. You know, as kids, you would try to find a piece dry enough that it's not sticky and messy. You know, it's sap that's dry, kind of dehydrated.
Yeah.
And it usually chip it off or cut it with a knife or something. And Mel was saying, you'd have to suck on it for 15, 20 minutes to get it to start softening up. And then you could start chewing.
Yeah.
It was a little stiffer than regular gum, but you can make a gum out of it. I mean, that'd be a great unit for kids in elementary school to do or something.
Yeah.
And then the spruce tips, when they first come out and they're small and they're real light green, you can eat those.
Yeah.
Pick them up and eat them or boil them in the water and make a tea.
I have two freezers at home. And, you know, once in a while I get hungry for native food. I never devour the other one. My freezer, just the other day, and I set it open to see what the hell I have for native food in there. And here I have all kind of native food in the freezer. Now I'm rich with native food. I had some oat meat, chilled meat, and some greens I got from Nome a couple years ago.
Where did I get that seed oil?
To
remember, still in the freezer.
I know.
You know, going over to a new Chicken, the native over there, they have their own way of eating native food, chewing. I have tasted them and I got they're good. Nothing wrong with it.
It's different.
Different.
You have to be older. Kids aren't allowed to try it. And if you're not an older adult, you don't get to try it either because you'll have to wrestle it out of an elder's hand to try it.
Once in a while they get the seal over there in the new chicken. They like to fry it over the fire. Me, I like to boil mine. And they cook chilled blubber. So they chop it and dice it like that, you know. And,
fry.
And I always tell them, don't throw that away. They all say, what are you on it for? That's my Eskimo bacon.
Grandma used to fry that fat.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I like it with tea.
Yeah.
Mm. And crackers.
Yeah. Good thing we had lunch already.
Being native, you know, you always miss something, some kind of native food, you know. Mm-hmm. I do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I was born and raised with it, you know.
I tried the watermelon berries the first time because I realized that my yard has them, and I thought that they were poisonous
mm-hmm.
for a long time, and then someone told me that you should pick those before they go bad.
Mm-hmm.
And do what? And I made juice out of them with raspberries, and mm-hmm. it's really good.
Yep.
I haven't tried the stems, but someone told me that it's kind of like cucumber or watermelon.
Yeah, it's kind of like the brine when you eat a little bit of the brine on the water.
No wonder the moose have been eating them at several mm-hmm. springs in a row.
Who was saying you could fry watermelon?
Fry it?
Fry? I don't know, somebody was talking about it.
Really? Huh.
Deep fried?
Must be a certain recipe.
No,
batter and
they'll put it on their grill. They'll slice it and
grill
it.
Like grill it.
Like
pineapple?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. They can grill it. It's not too bad. I've tried that before.
Well, I would like to thank everyone for your time and your the discussion has been very interesting. If you do have something that you want to add later, let me know, or Melanie,
mm-hmm.
and we can either record it again or put written notes.
Yeah, like you get something else.
Yeah.
Good for a call.
And if you have more thoughts or topics that you'd like to.